Chapter 12, Prophecies Concerning the Jews After the Fall of Jerusalem. The judgments of the Lord upon His chosen nation, the Jews, did not end with the destruction of the temple and the holy city. Their long idolatries and constant departures from the Lord, putting their own traditions in the place of His commandments, together with their culminating crime in the rejection and crucifixion of the Messiah, had brought these threatened calamities upon them. But they had called to heaven for such judgments to come, not only on themselves, but upon their succeeding generations also, by that terrible imprecation, "His blood be on us and on our children," referring to the blood of the Lord Jesus which they shed. O terrible curse that has found its fulfillment through all their subsequent existence down to the present day. Moses had from their beginnings testified of the desolations, scatterings, and persecutions that would come upon them if they should walk contrary to the Lord. "I will bring the land into desolation, and your enemies which dwell therein shall be astonished at it. And I will scatter you among the heathen, and will draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be desolate, and your cities waste. And upon them that are left alive of you, I will send a faintness into their hearts in the lands of their enemies, and the sound of a shaken leaf shall chase them, and they shall flee as fleeing from a sword, and they shall fall when none pursueth. And ye shall have no power to stand before your enemies. And ye shall perish among the heathen, and the land of your enemies shall eat you up, and they that are left of you shall pine away in their iniquity in your enemies' lands. And also in the iniquities of their fathers shall they pine away with them. And among these nations shalt thou find no ease, neither shall the sole of thy foot have rest, but the Lord shall give thee there a trembling heart, and failing of eyes, and sorrow of mind, and thy life shall hang in doubt before thee, and thou shalt fear the day and night, and shall have none assurance of thy life." What a vivid and yet accurate description these prophecies give of the subsequent history of the Jews in all lands and in all the ages down to the present time. They are to be found in every part of the earth, scattered among all nations, and yet retaining their own national characteristics, which everywhere have brought upon them a curse and reproach, persecution and destruction. Whatever country we take, the history of the Jews has been consistently again and again that predicted by Moses. Under Roman emperors, they were persecuted and slain and scattered over the earth, only to receive the same treatment wherever they went. In our own country, although they perhaps have more liberties than anywhere else, owing to a spirit of toleration, it has not always been the case. Stephen obtained money from them by extortion, with the alternative of expulsion and confiscation of property. Under Henry II, they were not allowed to bury their dead, except in London, which often meant long funeral journeys with possible attacks on the road. Under King John, the Jews were made the king's bondmen, taxable at his will, while in the reign of Henry III, they were compelled to wear on their breasts a saffron badge in the shape of the two tables of the law. Edward I imprisoned all Jews and compelled them to pay ransom, afterwards ordering them to leave the country and to lose their property. It was not until the time of Cromwell that the Jews were allowed to resettle in England, and a period of toleration began for them. In France, there is the same story of plunder, oppression, and slaughter, where also they were compelled to wear the hated Jewish badge, which on the continent was in the form of a wheel. In 1306, all Jews were suddenly seized and imprisoned, and then commanded to leave within 30 days, their property being confiscated. About 100,000 suffered in this way. At the French Revolution, a general liberty was granted to them. In Spain, the Jews were persecuted under the Mohammedan caliphs, as well as by the Crusaders, being confined to Jewish quarters and often subjected there to mob attacks, their houses being sometimes set on fire. In 1367, over 10,000 perished from sheer starvation, and in 1391, the Jewish quarter in Seville was set on fire, only a few escaping out of 30,000. In 1492, there was a general expulsion of Jews, when over 500,000 had to leave the country and lose their property. Under the Tsars of Russia, where there were some 5 million Jews, many were put to death, and 2 million escaped westwards to England and other countries. In Italy, they were continually subjected to the opposition of the popes. Hildebrand decreed that no Jew should hold an official post in any Christian kingdom. Innocent III provoked the Spanish and French rulers to persecute the Jews, and at the Fourth Lateran Council, he enforced the wearing of the Jewish badge, compelled them to pay tithes to the bishops, and threatened to interdict any Christians who held intercourse with them. Gregory IX and Innocent IV both ordered the burning of the Talmud, and several other popes pursued the same course of oppression. In Germany, the Crusaders attacked town after town and killed the Jews there, while in the 13th century, there was an order made for their expulsion from the country. Early in the 19th century, there came an emancipation, but the Jews abusing this, further opposition to them arose and was encouraged by Bismarck. But our own times have seen perhaps the greatest attempt to exterminate the Jewish race and that has ever been made. The Nazis, under Hitler's rule, attacked the Jews everywhere, so that thousands fled to other countries as refugees, while many other thousands were cruelly treated in concentration camps or asphyxiated in lethal gas chambers. These, then, are some of the solemn fulfillments of the judgments threatened to come upon the Jews, and we have wondered sometimes whether perhaps these have reached their zenith in the cruel persecutions of recent years, and whether better times may be coming to this much favored and yet much hated race. The greatest of all their judgments has been the inveterate hardness and unbelief under which they have been so long left in rejecting the Messiah. Doubtless, in this respect, a better day is promised concerning them, and this blindness in part is happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. And so all Israel shall be saved. If they abide not still in unbelief, they shall be grafted in, for God is able to graft them in again to the good olive tree. How much more shall these, which be the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree, And if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiving of them be but life from the dead? There are also some scriptures which seem to predict a return of the Jews to Palestine. Take, for instance, the following: "And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people which shall be left, from Assyria and from Egypt and from Pathros and from Cush and from Elam and from Shinar and from Hamath and from the islands of the sea. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. And I will strengthen the house of Judah, and I will save the house of Joseph, and will bring them again to place them, for I have mercy upon them, and they shall be as though I had not cast them off. And I will sow them among the people, and they shall remember me in far countries, and they shall live with their children and turn again. I will bring them again also out of the land of Egypt, and gather them out of Assyria, and I will bring them into the land of Gilead and Lebanon, and place shall not be found for them." In any case, it is a fact which has been taking place before our eyes for several years that the Jews are returning in great numbers to Palestine, and that in spite of the opposition of the Arabs and of the terrible attempts that have been made to exterminate them. It is a fact Israel exists today under that name as a Jewish state. An Austrian journalist named Herzl wrote a book called The Jewish State in 1896, and a congress was held at which it was stated that the aim was to establish a national home for Jews in Palestine. During the First Great World War, Palestine was taken from the Turks by the British under General Allenby, and the land came under a British mandate. The scheme for making a national home for the Jews was at that time under the presidency of Dr. Weizmann. Being a noted chemist, he was employed by the British in research work and made a useful discovery, for which he asked no payment in money, but that the settlement of the Jews in Palestine might be facilitated. This resulted in the Balfour Declaration in 1916, which pledged the British to make this Palestine home. And the subsequent events, through Arab influence with the backing of the Pope, have not reflected well on British honor in adhering to their pledge. But in spite of these oppositions, the Jewish state has become more and more an established fact. In Jerusalem, there is the Hebrew University as well as the government headquarters and many modern buildings such as the King David Hotel, one of the most beautiful in the East, and opposite it, a huge building for the YMCA. Tel Aviv is the greatest of their new towns and is built and equipped on modern lines with a population approaching 200,000. A new electric power station on the River Jordan was completed in 1932 and supplies power to all the Jewish towns and villages. In the meantime, the Jews are returning to Palestine in thousands, so far as the agreed quota will allow, and are busily engaged in restoring the agricultural and industrial life of their once flourishing land.